Now, the greatest story never told with Miles and Thrill.
Oh, welcome once again to the Greatest Story Never Told podcast, episode number 68. As we were saying, so close.
So close.
To the all-important next episode. I wonder what we'll talk about on the next episode.
On 69?
Yeah.
I got no ideas.
I don't either.
Yeah. We'll think about that.
Right, exactly. Well, I'm sure we'll come up with something. Welcome, once again, to the Greatest Story Never Told podcast. Again, if you'd like to be an unofficial sponsor, we haven't had one here in the last few episodes, so jump on in. Donate 15, 20 bucks to the three local Fisher houses in the area, and you too can be an unofficial sponsor of the Greatest Story Never Told podcast. If you have your own podcast going on, you want to promote that, you got a business, whatever the deal is, you want to sell some Girl Scout cookies, we don't care. If you want to be a sponsor, just shoot us an email, give some money to the three Fisher houses. Okay, as we are here in celebrating 50 years KISW, we had our big birthday celebration month and a half ago, somewhere in there.
But February 12th.
Yeah, yeah. It was very cool. And we got a chance to sit down and talk to a lot of people that were legendary here, not only at KISW, but people that you know from Seattle. What in the hell is that?
Sorry, that's my email.
Oh, well, you got an email.
You got an email.
Yeah.
Who, people who grew up on the radio station who you know from other walks of life. You know, some Seahawks were on with BJ and Miggs and other things. But either way, we got a chance to talk to Dave Grohl, which was cool because Dave Grohl is exactly who you think Dave Grohl is going
to
be.
And it was cool because it was on Zoom. So you physically got to look at this guy as you had a conversation.
We had a great conversation with him. We played for him when he was on the air here at KISW when they announced that he was going to be the new drummer in the band Nirvana. It was on Damon Stewart's show, and it sounded like he was 10. The look on his face when he heard it.
He was mortified. People could have seen
his
physical reaction to hearing his voice, man. He was, mortified is the word.
Got to talk to Gary Crow, got to talk to Mike West. We talked to Steve Slayton, so we got to talk a lot of old KISW old school stories when radio was fun and cool, and you know, there was groupies and backstage stuff, and you know, people were going nuts at concerts, and it was kind of that sex, drugs, and rock and roll era.
That's exactly what it was. Precisely that. It was sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Oh, and booze.
Yeah. And right now we don't have any sex, really, because of the pandemic, and drugs are hard to get because of the pandemic, and rock and roll just basically come to a stop because you can't really do any shows.
Yeah, the pandemic's ruined everything. And he's not kidding about the drugs, I'm telling you. Your normal drug dealers are like, hey, man, you know, demand's down, flow is low.
Rainn Wilson joined us. You know him from The Office, among other things. UW grad, grew up listening to KISW. Exactly what you expect. Now, on the flip side of that, we also got a lot of names that we kind of knew, some names that we didn't know. But either way, whenever you see those big names like Rainn Wilson or, you know, whoever it's going to be, Dave Grohl, you're excited to do the interview because you have a respect for this person one way or another. You might be a fan of theirs in many different ways, you know, and that happens a lot. But they're still there to talk to you, which is weird because in an interview, you've interviewed someone for maybe 10, 15 minutes. You think maybe you kind of know them a little bit more. Ultimately, though, they don't remember you.
Of course not.
They don't know who in the hell you are.
No.
You know what I mean? They don't have any recollection of it. They probably did 15 interviews that day on some kind of a junket for whatever, the new album, the new movie, the new book, the new whatever.
That's why all the interviews are so stupid. Not ours, but people always ask the same. Like, I always say, man, don't ask, if a band puts out a new album, don't ask them what they think of the album, because they're not going to do anything other than tell you, hey, we're real proud of this. But you already know the answer.
Right.
What do you think they're going to say? Frankly, we hate this album. We think it sucks.
Yeah.
His guitar, they're not going to tell you that. So why even ask? I will say this, as far as setting up the interviews for the 50th anniversary, we were excited to talk to Dave Grohl. We had never talked to him before, but then apparently he was not initially excited to talk to us.
Is that right?
Not for anything about us, but he has talked to Ryan Castle several times, so they are familiar with each other. And somehow the information got to his agent, bookie, whatever you call this person, that Ryan Castle was going to be doing the sit-down. So Dave Grohl is prepared to be comfortable with this guy he's used to. And I guess when we rolled in, he's kind of like, well, F for these guys, right? So it took like 10 minutes, but it got worked out. And he was gracious. He was awesome.
Yeah.
I don't think he cared. I think it was more his publicist.
Sure.
Well, she was like anything not else. Having it at first, but finally it settled down. But there's always, like, nothing is ever just easy or normal.
You know, but we're fired up about it.
Hell yeah.
We're excited about it. And sometimes we're excited about stuff, and sometimes we're not. And we've never interviewed Aerosmith before. But then we got a chance to interview Joe Perry. Now, he was playing with the Hollywood Vampires at the time.
Sure.
And they were in We are fired up because if you grew up listening to Aerosmith, you really loved that band.
Legendary guitar player.
Yeah.
This is Joe freaking Perry.
Just to give you an idea, this was so painful for us. And maybe you can't hear it in this, but we're dying. This is at least 6-7 minutes in of him just going. Joe Perry.
It's kind of a mind blower, you know. So we're going to have that. This is one of the songs we're going to put on the cover of Classic Rock magazine and give it away for free. Or put the CD on there, and so people can hear what kind of get a taste of what solo record's going to sound like. And also,
it never gets better.
This is back to that Guitar World interview you were talking about. You
know, yeah, just like, dude, come on, man.
What kind of strings do you play, Joe?
I use D'Addario light gauge nickel plated. Who cares?
Right. Those frets, are they custom frets? I see that they look like they have a shiny surface on them.
But dear God, man. It was a painful interview.
Who does that pearl work for you?
Oh, yeah. We were disappointed. Right. We were like, that. Yeah. We were excited about this. Come on, Joe. And then we got that.
And we had to deal with that, right? So we also
It's like sitting next to a guy on a Greyhound bus that you didn't mean to, and he doesn't shut up the whole ride.
Right. Mm-hmm. We're excited to talk to Jolene because we used to work with her every day. We haven't seen her in a while because she moved out of state. Mm-hmm. A number of people, and then to be honest with you, a lot of the legendary guys who were DJs back in the days, we never really had a chance to sit down and have a heart-to-heart with them either, or just any kind of discussion. I went out one night and got absolutely hammered with Steve Slayton, but we weren't talking about radio.
Right.
We were just getting smashed at a bar. So that was, you know what I mean? It wasn't like a radio geek-out conversation. But there was one name on the list, all right? So this is a weird one, because we're like, all right, well, this guy, he was a part-timer back in the day at KISW. He did some promotions, started out like a lot of people do in radio, where you kind of work your way in the door, and then after that, maybe they give you a board-hopping job or an air shift here and there, and that's kind of where this guy, Andy, was. He was a part-timer, and he started out on the overnights, and he did promotions at concerts and things like that, but we're like, all right, well, you know, we know all these names.
Right, I've never heard of this guy.
This guy is.
And then his body of experience here. You know, everyone else we're talking to, like you said, either it's a luminary within the music industry or they worked at KISW for a significant amount of time. And then here's this guy, and we see his name and we see his connection to KISW, which is like overnight board op.
Yeah.
And good, but we're like, what do you want us to talk to this guy about? Because we're like, was he on the air? They're like, no, he wasn't on the air. Okay, well, like, did he sit in with Slayton or anything like that? No. He ran the board overnight.
Did an air shift or so, and then he moved out of town, worked at a different radio station, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, but out of all the interviews we did, honest to God, as far as being interesting, this guy was the most interesting guy that we sat down and talked with.
And it was awesome.
And I actually bitched to Castle. I said, who in the F is this? And right. Like, why in the F do you want us to interview this guy? I mean, seriously, we got to get a show ready. You know, like, what the hell's going on here? He's like, no, yeah, whatever. Just. And I'm like, all right. So I started doing my interview, and I'm like, I started doing the research about this guy. And I looked down, and I'm like, holy shit. I didn't know who this guy was.
Right.
And I think when it comes to hell, we call this thing the greatest story never told. You've never heard of this guy.
Right.
You don't know who he is. But as far as what his story is, it is one of the greatest stories I think I've heard, just from a standpoint of just what this guy's done in our industry and who he is and the kind of things
I was blown away
that he has done. So what we didn't get a chance to give you all of the conversation that we had with one Andy Schoen, but we wanted to get it so you could hear the entire conversation with him now, because he's a fascinating guy.
And you will realize that whether you know who this guy is or not, you know everything this guy has done.
Yeah. So we'll see you next time on episode number 69 of the Greatest Story Never Told podcast. But we'll leave you with our interview with Andy Schoen. I know you're going to like it. All right, ladies and gentlemen, as we celebrate 50 years here at KISW, 50 years in the community, 50 years of rock, which is an amazing feat for any radio station. Steve, there have been some household names, everything from, you know, you've heard of Crow and West.
Sure.
You've heard of Steve Slayton.
Correct.
BJ and Migs.
Right.
In the morning, you know, there's been so many. Bob Rivers. One name that you might not know is Andy Schoen, but Andy might be more important than anybody who has ever been a part of the KISW history. Andy, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us for the birthday celebration.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. I was just thinking the opposite, that you guys must be really desperate for guests if you're interviewing a former late-night weekend DJ.
To be fair, we are.
Andy, I appreciate
it. Andy, when they sent us this thing, we have to be honest with you. I mean, just like anybody else, when you don't recognize the name right off the bat. Now, people in the industry, in the entertainment, they know exactly who you are. But the everyday person in Seattle, maybe not so much. So, you know, same with us. We said, well, I wonder why we're interviewing someone who was only here for a short amount of time, but got their start here.
Right, and, but did the board hopping overnight. And we're like, okay. Yeah.
And then we look at this resume of yours.
Like, holy crap.
I wasn't board hopping. I had my own show.
Oh, all right.
I wasn't board hopping. I got to talk like 3 times an hour.
Okay, well, that's not bad.
What kind of bands were you playing at the time? What years was it? Year was it that you were here?
Right after I graduated from high school in late 1982, I started right around the holiday between 82 and 83.
Okay. And at that point in time, when you got this job, KISW was the number one station in town. This is the rock station where you can get tickets, man. You're like, you're almost like, you know, like Damone in Fast Times or Ridgemont High. Like, you're the guy that can get people in the door. You know what I mean? You got tickets, you got pull. Was this one of those things where, as a kid and being in that environment, I mean, you had to think to yourself, I'm going to do this. This is what I want to do for a living. Something like this.
Yeah, I'd already been doing it for a living for a couple of years. I lived kind of an almost famous, if you know the movie, that kind of childhood. I'd started on the radio in a commercial station at age 16, and I'd been the morning man on my local station in Reno, Nevada before coming up to Seattle. So I'd already kind of experienced, you know, Grace Slick gave me my first beer backstage at a Jefferson Starship concert. You know, I mean, I'd already kind of had all these experiences as a young kid. So, but I was a good kid, kind of a clean-cut preppy kid. I didn't have like the Jesus hair and the handlebar mustache of the late 70s and early 80s. You know, I looked like a kid that would be on the tennis team from high school, but I was working at these powerful rock stations, which is kind of funny in retrospect.
Did you find that more people gravitated to you because of that? Because you did not look like, you said, you know, the quintessential rock star, the crazy hair. It's like this clean-cut kid, but you're working in a world of rock.
Yeah, well, it was, I think that at my first job where I got my break down in Reno, the program director just liked my hustle and the fact that I came in and kind of had an unofficial internship and really just wanted to learn everything. I was so passionate about it. And then when I reached out to Bo Phillips, who was the program director of KISW at the time, the reason why I was able to get the job was, and you guys might know this, there used to be like a trade magazine and you would go to the back and there'd be the classified ads. And this ad said, and I spent time in Port Angeles outside of Seattle, about 90 minutes outside of Seattle, growing up before we lived down in Nevada. And so I loved and idolized KISW. And it was literally one of the best stations in the country. And so I thought one day if I could work there. So I was familiar with it. So I see this ad for a weekend DJ and it says, send tape and resume, no calls. And so the first thing I did at the station where I worked was I went into the production room and turned on the mic so that it said on air, that the light was flashing so nobody would come in. I picked up the phone and I called Bo Phillips at KISW and they put me through to him and he answered and I said I wanted to give him my tape and he said, great. And I said it says no calls, but I thought if you really wanted something, how could you not call? And so that's how it started. And he liked my hustle as well. And he admitted years later that he had never listened to my tape.
Isn't that the way it goes?
Right. So, I showed up at the KISW headquarters at the time with a briefcase and my cassette and a banana and like some headphones. And I was ready to go. You know,
that's all it took.
There's a story about how Bo, who was the program director at the time, put you in charge of some tickets, I guess, for the police as they were playing the Tacoma Dome. And what exactly did you mess this up, or what was the deal on that?
Yeah. Well, I didn't have a lot of money. You know, I was working about 8 hours a week, and that was my only job up there. And so I didn't have any extra money. And I love the police. I think this was the Synchronicity Tour, most likely, at the Tacoma Dome with the Thompson Twins and somebody else, maybe Flock of Seagulls or something.
Sweet. That sounds like a great show.
So, that was a good lineup, right? But the Police, you know, was, you know, huge at the time. And so I mentioned to Bo that I would love to go to see the Police show if there are any extra tickets. And he said I could have his tickets. And so my girlfriend and I went out to the Tacoma Dome. And back then, you know, this, they didn't even ask for ID. You just had to know who to ask for, you know, who to mention at the will call box. And so I went up there and I said, hi, Bo Phillips. And they handed me an envelope. And inside the envelope was 8 tickets and 8 backstage passes. And so I was like, oh my God, we have 6 extra tickets. And the show was far beyond sold out, right? And so I thought, well, I could really use the cash from that. Every single person was coming up to us asking if we had any extra tickets.
Hey-ola.
And they were general admission tickets. And so it wasn't like there was, you know, they were assigned seating at that time. And a lot of shows back then were GA.
Sure.
And so I said, I would feel badly if we made a profit on these, but, you know, what's the harm of selling them? You know, we should give them away and say they're from KISW, but I could really use the cash. Why don't we sell them for face value? And I won't feel so badly about it. And so in about 30 seconds, we sell these 6 tickets and probably net about $150 or something. I mean, tickets are probably $20 then, you know. I'm now rich at this point. I'm right. Going to a rock concert with backstage passes with my girlfriend, and I'm rich. Now, I've got $150 in my pocket. And then around the corner comes the rest of the KISW full-time air staff.
Oh, no.
And they say, hey, Andy, Bo said you've got our tickets.
No.
Oh, no.
Oh, God.
And I just about blacked out because I just had visions of maybe getting a job on an AM country station. And so I quickly said, knowing that they were GA tickets, I said, there weren't any tickets in there, but there were these backstage passes. And they grabbed the passes, put them on their pants, and we walked in to the concert, and that was it. And I dodged a bullet, because it turns out in a general admission show, if you got the passes and the tickets, it's kind of redundant. So I really... Wow. My career almost ended in a split second over $150.
Damn, that is incredible. That is incredible. Talking to Andy Schoen. Andy, then you went, you programmed a number of radio stations once you left the Seattle area. I believe you went to San Antonio for a while. You ended up at KROQ, the legendary rock station in Los Angeles eventually. I know you put on the Kevin and Bean show. You put Loveline on at night, hoping to get that, you know, that next day return of people waking up. Some very, as far as the world of radio goes, and some of the things that you put into place from how we listen to, how we digest things, you were responsible for that. And the idea was that you put on a show at night like Loveline that people love, and then they're going to wake up the next day and the radio is going to be on the same station, right. And you're going to listen to the new morning show, Kevin and Bean. I mean, as far as what we know of our industry,
that's the standard.
These are some legendary moves that you made, and I know you don't think of it that way, but
or do you?
I mean, yeah, all the day's work, right?
Yeah, but
I mean, did you feel that you were being innovative at the time you were doing it, or was it honestly just, hey, I like this show, Loveline, or I like Kevin and Bean, or did you really have a system in place where you thought, you know what, you wake up tomorrow, you're still on my station?
Yeah, I'll tell you, most people don't realize this. And if you know, K-Rock is, you know, the defining music station probably in the world, and, you know, famous, known to be world famous. And so when I make this comparison, people would think, you know, it sounds like a sellout, or it sounds sort of counter to what the K-Rock brand would be. But just structurally, when I got down to Los Angeles, where I'd had great success in Denver at another rock station that was very similar to KISW in format, K-Rock was an alternative station called Rock of the 80s. And it played really, at the time, what was known as K-Rock music, which was, you know, largely Depeche Mode and The Cure and Tears for Fears and things like that. But the station had never really had a powerful morning show. And it was up against some iconic people in Southern California, a guy named Scott Shannon, who'd created a station called Z100, a big famous station. Rick Dees, who was a fairly well-known national DJ on a station called Kiss there. Rick Thomas, who'd been on Mork and Mindy and a bunch of other things. So I mean, just big personalities. We didn't have a morning show. And so I got down there and tried to figure out what we would do to succeed. And I actually used NBC, the network, as kind of the structure. And I'll tell you what that means. I thought, you know, the NBC has the Today Show where people wake up. They have the Tonight Show that people go to bed with. And then they have the Olympics as like a quarter long stunt that gets everybody excited about, you know, the network.
Right.
And so for us, Loveline became The Tonight Show with Dr. Drew and ultimately Adam Carolla and Ricky Rackman and others. Kevin and Bean became The Today Show. And The Acoustic Christmas, the first radio station winter, you know, Christmas festival, the K-Rock Acoustic Christmas, which, you know, preceded all these other jingle balls and, you know, winter concerts that stations do, that became our Olympics. And we used that for the fourth quarter. And so all that stuff just kind of worked. And
was it a hard sell when you, because radio is sometimes slow to innovate, so to speak. So was it a tough sell or did people trust your judgment on this?
My boss at K-Rock and Mel Karmazin, who was the chairman and CEO of Infinity Broadcasting, we were the flagship station for them. You got to remember, I'm a 24-year-old, 25-year-old kid probably, on my second job in programming at the flagship station for Infinity Broadcasting, and which is now, I guess, the parent company of your, it was CBS and now Intercom, right?
Right, correct.
Yeah. And so I'm down there, and he had just paid more money than anyone had ever paid for a radio station, $45 million at the time. It was unheard of. And then they put me in there, and I'm coming up with all these crazy ideas, and they all kind of worked. So that's there was a little bit of luck and timing, but we had some momentum early on.
But then, Andy, we're talking to Andy Schoen, you went to New York, and a lot of people don't know this, and I don't know if this is the right context to put this in, but when you went to MTV, you left that job for the gig at MTV, where you're the head of programming for MTV2, VH1, and all that stuff. You took the music off of music television. So you went
in
from
spite
a format,
of the M representing
right,
music.
Exactly.
Right.
You went in because of that, you know, you put on like Beavis and Butthead and stuff. And then from there, when you look at the entire evolution of where things have gone from that point and what MTV has done as far as Jersey Shore, all these shows, basically in an indirect way, you and O.J. Simpson are responsible for the Kardashians.
Yeah, I mean, I did do the first ever celebrity reality show, and it was actually with Dennis Rodman, and it was called the Rodman World Tour. And I gave him a bag of money in the Bulls offseason at the peak of his career with the Bulls when he was dating Madonna and all that.
I'm sure the Bulls loved you for that.
Yeah, we needed a mid-season replacement at MTV. We were having some ratings trouble, and so I went out to Orange County where Dennis was living in the off-season to meet with him, and offered him some money if we could follow him around with some cameras for 10 episodes, which we did. And boy, that was a journey into darkness for me. Just Dennis and I going to Las Vegas for a weekend. Oh, I have to tell you something.
I bet you could.
That's a whole other separate chat. That's coming up next. But anyway, so that was the first ever of these celebrity reality shows where you would inject, you know, some sort of plot line, like let's go Harley drive riding with Jay Leno, or let's go to Las Vegas or whatever, you know, and that's what these things were like. So yeah, that was the first of it. But truthfully, in my time at MTV in the 90s, which is kind of considered the golden era when it was its most influential, what I brought to a channel that was sort of pumping out the sediment from the bottom of the hairband tank of the late 80s, you know, I was lucky. This is where timing and luck comes in. Is that I had Nevermind from Nirvana under one arm and I had The Chronic from Dr. Dre under the other. So we were able to usher in an era of and bring really, really mainstream hip hop music and alternative rock on MTV as a platform. And it really worked. And of course, there was so much depth there so fast with Nirvana and Pearl Jam and Alice in Chains and Soundgarden and Dre and Snoop and Tupac and Biggie and Puffy and all of those guys. And so that really was the music credibility foundation for MTV. And then we balanced it out with House of Style and Sports and MTV News and Unplugged. And yes, more and more original programs about, you know, like Beavis and Butthead. But the truth is, Beavis and Butthead was a bit of a was a strategy to get people to talk about music videos again because the novelty had really kind of worn off.
You know what? Okay, that makes sense.
Now that you say it out loud, exactly. I feel like a fool for not getting that. But I'm like, but think about, you know, the impact of that, because I'm sure there was some pushback on a show like Beavis and Butthead because it's so inane, it's ridiculous. There is some element of fun, but you know, years later. You get something like King of the Hill, which is on a major network, Fox Network, but that's a direct derivative of Beavis and Butthead. I mean, do you ever You don't sound like this type of guy. You sound very different than me. But do you ever just pat yourself on the back on, hey, man, you know, people are still quoting Boomhauer as much as you can quote him because King of the Hill was on Fox. King of the Hill's on Fox because I took a chance on Beavis and Butthead.
Well, Beavis and Butthead, and listen, I'm not solely responsible for any of this stuff. It was a team effort, you know, of our animation department. Our animation department, when I came into MTV, the short story on Beavis and Butthead, because it's a very popular show for everybody, but was that I wanted to do a show like Mystery Science Theater 3000 on Comedy Central, which took old movies and had these robots kind of just voicing over them.
Right.
So we would, when you're developing a TV show at a network, you come up with a concept and you put it on the schedule and you sort of put title TBD. So we had two guys on a screen titled TBD. And okay. So then in my weekly programming meeting, our animation department came in with a short called Frog Baseball with Beavis and Butthead. And it was like a 4-minute video of Beavis and Butthead playing baseball with a frog. And they played it on in the conference room. And within about 30 seconds, we were all going, and it was so infectious.
Right.
And so Doug Herzog, who was the Uber head of programming and ultimately later ran Comedy Central and Fox TV and other things, pointed to the screen and said, Andy, there's our two guys and a screen right there. And so it was a collaborative effort to put that together. But Mike Judge, who created Beavis and Butthead and then King of the Hill and, of course, Office Space, mm-hmm. and Silicon Valley and all these great things. He's just a genius. I've been fortunate. I've just loved the work throughout my life. And I've had the opportunity to be part of pop culture and to help to move culture and shape it. And that's very rewarding work.
Talking to Andy Schoen, then from there, we won't get into all of this resume. Executive Vice President, General Manager, Warner Brothers Records.
It starts getting humiliating for us the more
CBS
we go through.
CBS Radio, Founder, President,
essentially,
Chief
guys,
Officer,
essentially,
Universal.
Yeah, we can just cut to the chase here and just call it the way it is.
Chief,
I can't hold down a job.
Digital Officer and President.
I'm constantly on the run.
President Live Nation, exactly. Head of Loop Media, co-founder of Revolt Media and TV. What is the lasting memory for you as far as the people, the personalities, your time in Seattle, your time at KISW? What is the thing that really stands out that you remember the most from that time?
Well, I think it was the station at the time. And with all due respect to the entire radio genre, radio DJs locally were the original influencers before social media. They were often bigger than the bands that would come to town because they were your regular 5-day-a-week personalities, the celebrities in a town. Radio stations were the only touchstone for people or a rite of passage for young people growing up or wanting information about music. So the importance of a radio station and the relationship between a station and the listener was so powerful. And KISW was so strong with maybe like a 10 share of which for the audience listening was so far and away above all the other stations at the time. And it was a brand that had that flaming rock logo that you've had for all these years that people would put on every car. And we had the Miss Rock Hydroplane and we had the brand was so powerful. And the disc jockeys there, the personalities were like Steve Slayton was one of the great jocks in American history at night. And there were that it was so the station just had this strength and energy. So when I arrived there at 18, it was like being like the bat boy, for the Dodgers or something. Yeah, right. And I would maybe get a chance to someday swing the bat. But I knew I was so proud to be part of that. I had to work so hard to kind of rise up to the lowest level of being on the same page with all of these guys. I never had a chance to really get there. It was just such an amazing, powerful team. I always say, if I'm going to compare it to football or something, it wasn't the Giants, right? Or, but it was like the Green Bay Packers. You could win the Super Bowl with KISW. That's how it was. It was that kind of station respected around the world. And we broke bands, and it was the foundation for all the success I've had in my career was understanding how powerful a brand was and how to respect it and how to cultivate it. It's just so I don't have anything more than a memory of a childhood and teen years ending at a place as majestic and powerful as KISW. There's the big 100 in Seattle, as they call it in the analog days.
There's nothing wrong with that memory. Who were some of the bands that were breaking big at the time that you were at KISW? It said it's around 82.
Well, rock radio and the rock format. Go ahead. It was kind of going through some strange growing pains at that time, that in 1982, 83, because we were trying to fit new wave rock into kind of a tough, coarser kind of, you know, what is today classic rock format. Right. These bands were popular and they were MTV bands because MTV had come on the scene. So we were trying to figure out how to play these bands that were, or these artists or songs that were popular around Lynyrd Skynyrd and AC/DC and Zeppelin and Aerosmith and stuff like that. And it didn't really work very well. So I would say that you know, that it was exciting to see like U2 rising up and the Police continuing to grow. And you know, what's amazing about that time, I tell people now, I was with my kids. We were listening to my favorite like 20 Led Zeppelin songs the other day at home. I'm kind of pounding through and sort of going through them. And I was saying, you know, I played some of these songs when they were only 3 or 4 years old. I mean, it's hard to believe now, but those were recurrents, as we say in radio.
That, and you also played Mr. Mister. Or, you know, did you tell him that? Did you say, look, I played Wang Chung?
Mr. Right. Okay. Or like Bill Phillips used to say, men without hits.
You know, you're no friend of mine.
You know, Come on, Eileen, Dexy's Midnight Runners. You know, some of those could kind of work, but I mean, I'll tell you something. Playing like that like Flock of Seagulls, Wishing, or playing like some of the Thompson Twins stuff, and those things, those sounded pretty weird on KISW. However, things like Psychedelic Furs, Love My Way, and songs like that, they did fit okay. But we played a lot of that stuff that kind of just didn't fit. And eventually just kind of fell back. And then some of those songs went to other stations. I mean, Seattle had a station called KYYX, and then it had a station called The End, and some of those stations that played some of that stuff exclusively. But KISW returned to dominance by sticking to what it knows, which is Seattle's best rock, I think.
Andy Schoen, thank you for spending some time with us on our 50th birthday celebration. It's been an incredible pleasure to talk to you, and congratulations on all your success. I'm not sure what your next job will be, but I'm sure it'll be announced.
Can't hold one.
It'll be announced in 6 months. So
can't hold one down. Yeah. You know, here's what we do know. We know it'll be sooner than later that I'll have to be looking for another one.
Yeah. Andy Schoen, thank you.
Well, good luck finding some of the bigger heavy hitters at KISW history. Because if you're, I don't know if you're ending or starting with me, but boy, you got some work to do.
Andy, now that we're off, real quick, I got to ask you a question, just real quick here, because it says this is where this is not for you, but because it says you're an investor and head of music at the Hard Rock Hotel in Las Vegas. Did Richard Branson pay you off pretty nicely for that?
Oh, you mean when the hotel was sold?
Yeah, we used to stay there all the time.
Yeah, that was our joint, man.
I'm telling you, we dropped more money in there than anything. So I'm hoping you got
some of it legally.
I'm hoping you got a little of that.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, you're right. I was an original part of the Hard Rock. That started in like 1993, and we sold the Hard Rock to a company called Morgan's Hotel Group, which owns places like the Delano in Miami and the Mondrian in Los Angeles. There have been there, the Royalton in New York. So that hotel group bought the Hard Rock in, I want to say, about 2007. So it was sort of long. It was sort of, by the way, we sold it for 10 times more than Richard Branson bought it for.
Nice.
So, good. The market really changed in Las Vegas.
Good for you.
Yeah. I was sorry to see it go, because it was really, I don't know how long you guys have been going there, but it was for a lot of years a pretty awesome place.
It really was, man.
We always had a great time there. Well, Andy, if you're ever in need for a new Beavis and Butthead, please give us a call.
Sounds like it. So how long have you guys been on the station? Tell me how long you guys have been there.
15 years, man.
We've been fortunate. We've been number one the entire time.
Afternoons on KISW?
Yeah, so I guess it was a big deal when they first hired us. You know, not in our opinion, but, you know, it's a legacy rock station. So our boss had to fight with the brass a little bit and said, look, these guys are talk. They do not play music. And they were kind of like, man, sounds like a bad idea, and maybe it was, but it's worked out exceptionally well for both sides. For 15 years, man, we've been doing really well, and I think it's two songs an hour.
We convinced them, Andy, to change their philosophy from being a Men 25 54 radio station to being a people station, And since that point in time, we've been we've been number one 25-54 persons for 15 and a half years.
Wow.
So we've been on a nice little streak.
Well,
knock on wood.
I sort of reconnected with radio a little bit because I'm doing a scripted dramatic series about the history of K-Rock called World Famous for Netflix. It's like a 10 episode a season series. So I acquired the intellectual property from KROQ so we could do an authentic show. And so I got a little connected to the station again and started talking about radio and all that. And I started thinking about terrestrial radio. And I think the key to KISW success is just in that you guys are doing something that you can't get on Spotify, you know, or on a station at KZOK across town or something. So the fact that they invested in you as personalities, you're offering a kind of content and entertainment that is not on music. So any radio station that today has to compete with an on-demand service, it's really challenging. So you're doing something. I mean, you really fortified the station. So it's really worked.
That's always been our argument. Like, just if people are entertained, whatever it might be, movie, TV show, then they stick around. And that way, one thing that we always took personally was just the idea that, look, we'd rather do talk. So whatever the ratings are, we know if it's us. Not if AC/DC put out a good album, but if people are willing to listen to us.
And not only that, but not to be offensive, invite everybody to the party. You can listen with your kids in your car. You can be entertained. And we're not just singly, we're not sitting there talking about MMA for 3 hours. You know what I mean? Or whatever. Andy, hey, thank you so much for your time and all the best.
Guys, it was nice to talk to you. And I guess so you're saying February 12th?
Friday, February 12th, yeah.
And then what they'll do from there is...
And you're going to do like a special... What are you doing for it?
We're doing a one big day celebration with you and everybody else that we get on the air, from Crow and West to Bob Rivers to Cameron Crow or... the Wilson sisters, the guys in Alice in Chains. They'll do some vignettes and just say, hey, you know, some will be just regular liner stuff. Others will be more in-depth depending on their relationship with the station. I'm trying to get Bill Gates on. You know, the more of the luminaries in town, part of the community, and then, of course, the music end of it.
Yeah.
The Joel McHales of the world who have passed through Seattle or have lived here for a while. Anybody who's had a connection, and KISW has been a part of that. We're going to put on that one day. But then from there, like your interview will be on that day, but then... there'll be vignettes that play throughout the 50th anniversary celebration. So your interview will be sprinkled in moments as far as, you know, looking back at the history of the station.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it'll be nice.
Great. Well, good. Well, it's nice to meet you guys. And congratulations on all the success. And I'm jealous that you're in the Pacific Northwest and at KISW.
It's 42 and rainy, Andy.
Yeah. Don't be today.
It's 42 and it's going to be dark at 4:10. So you're good
here.
In Beverly Hills.
City.
Oh, you're in New York. Okay.
Oh, the snow is gone.
Oh, man, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's coming your way. All right, brother. Good talking to you.
All right.
Thanks, Andy.
Take care.
You've been listening to The Greatest Story Never Told with Miles and Thrill on radio.com.
Oh, man.
A Double Flush production.